Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Caroline Drummond-Smith. Caroline is a devoted wife, mother of three grown-up children, and a survivor of a 35-year battle with anorexia. Her journey from struggling with an eating disorder, which deeply impacted her family, to finding true happiness and self-acceptance is both powerful and inspiring. Now an eating disorder coach and founder of Zest Health Coaching, Caroline is passionate about helping others discover their true worth beyond the confines of their struggles. Her story is one of resilience, healing, and the enduring strengths of family bonds. This week, we talk about Caroline's experience of navigating an eating disorder for 35 years, raising a family and being a wife, and the impact that this has had on her relationships. We also speak about her recovery and how it's never too late for that to be something that you can endeavour and that there is hope for everybody. Please excuse my cough-ridden voice. I am very, very sorry, but I really hope that you enjoy this episode and find it as inspiring as I did. Caroline, it is so lovely to have you on the podcast. It was so funny when you messaged me because I was like, I'm pretty sure that I know you from somewhere, but don't know. And then obviously I put the link together.
You recognised
the podcast with Joel.
Yeah.
Exactly. So how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Good. Now I've got the computer set up. Technology.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be a struggle sometimes, but it's very nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Hannah.
So I guess for the listeners, did you want to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do?
Yeah, so my name's Caroline and I am an eating disorder coach. I trained about 5 years ago now, it must be. I help people predominantly with anorexia because that's what I suffered with for 35 years. And it's funny how clients find you, isn't it? The ones you're meant to be working with find you.
Absolutely.
That's what I do. Thanks to my experience with an eating disorder, I now help other people.
Amazing. And I'm so interested to talk to you about your experience today, and I think a lot of the listeners will be as well, because often when we talk about eating disorders, specifically anorexia, there's a big focus on the younger generation. And So I think the fact that you are older will be really useful for people, but also recovering after 35 years. You know, a lot of people think after a certain amount of time, that's kind of it, and you're stuck with an eating disorder for the rest of your life.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose that's also what my sort of my take on it, and I really try and emphasize with people, is that it is never too late. It really isn't. It's harder. That's not undermining how hard it is at any stage, but I think the longer you have it, the more those neural pathways have become so entrenched that it just becomes a way of life year after year after year. But it is possible. It is so possible to fully recover.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would love to come on to your recovery in a bit once we've spoken for a bit. But I guess I wanted to ask you first, you know, what was your experience like with having an eating disorder for 35 years?
So I developed it at the age of 15. I'm 57 now. Mm-hmm. So I was 15 and it started just, you know, as often as the case. It wasn't because I wanted to lose weight. It was a form of control. It was feeling insecure. I was sent away to boarding school at 16. So I think I always used to say it started at 16 when I went to boarding school, but actually looking back, it started before then. But it really took a hold of me because I was I was brought up in Paris and I was sent to England. So that was all very new. Mm. And so it was really, I remember getting to school thinking, I can't control anything here, but I can control my food. It was a conscious decision. So that's where it started. And in those days, all that time ago, there wasn't the understanding around eating disorders. You either went to a psychiatrist, and to be honest, they didn't know a lot about it, or you did nothing. And so I did nothing. So I didn't get the help. Now, if I'd got the help, who knows what would have happened if I'd got the help I needed. We can always look back, can't we, and say, what if? But, you know, I didn't get any help. So it just rumbled on. And there were times over the years when it was worse, much, much worse. Times when it was sort of okay, when people weren't so worried, but it was always there in my head, you know. And as we know, it's not just physical, it's the mental side, and it was always there all that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I struggled for 14 years, and I guess a similar thing in that it's peaks and troughs, isn't it? It's kind of, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good, but it's always persisting there.
Yeah.
In the back of your mind.
And it's always there to go back to fall back on. It's that reassurance that, oh, if something goes wrong, well, at least I know I've got that I can.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about it. If something wasn't going right, well, I always knew I had the eating disorder. I could restrict, and that made me feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you notice throughout your time with the eating disorder, did it change in its presentation at all? Like, obviously we said it got better and worse. Mm. Did your symptoms change at all, or was it kind of the same thing going back to each time?
I think it was the same going back to, and it was always restriction. The exercise addiction, I had an exercise addiction, increased after I had children. Right. As they got a bit older, and I think, again, the gym became a thing, which when I was a teenager, it wasn't really a thing. So the restriction was the same, but the way I went about it was different. And that was because I had a family. I had to sort of cover certain things up. So, and we can talk a bit more about that. But yeah, so the way I restricted, I found ways, you know, as we do, very clever. But when I was a teenager, I just had myself to look after. I didn't have to, I wasn't responsible for anyone else. So I could basically do what I wanted. Whereas once I had the children, it was all a bit different, and a husband and social life around that. So it did change in that way.
Do you think, because I've spoken to a couple of people that have had children, and then that's been either a trigger for an eating disorder or a trigger for a relapse. Was that your experience in that the pregnancy and then afterwards triggered it, or was that not something you experienced?
No, it wasn't for me, actually. I was desperate to be pregnant, and funnily enough, I couldn't get pregnant because I'd messed my body up. So I was on fertility treatment, and I was so fortunate. I got pregnant with my first child, and I loved being pregnant. And I didn't mind having a bump because it was a baby, so there was a reason for it. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to be back in my jeans as soon as possible. So at the moment I'd had him, then it came back with vengeance. And actually through the pregnancy, it was there because I was in hospital for 5 weeks beforehand. And I remember the food was horrible. So I thought, great, great excuse not to eat. But, you know, it's tragic, really, that I wasn't feeding my unborn baby properly. And then 20 months later, I had twins. And again, that was fertility treatment, and in hospital for 10 weeks. So again, perfect excuse not to eat. Now, you know, I was really lucky, or the children were lucky, that they were born all very healthy. Mm-hmm. And they say that it's not the baby that suffers, it's the mother. So I was doing so much damage to myself. But everything I was eating, or the little I was eating, was going to them. Mm. So they were okay. So during the pregnancy, no, I was okay. I mean, I was okay. I was eating, but not enough. But I didn't mind changing shape. And then I bounced back. You know, I hate all this stuff about getting back your body back. But for me, it was important afterwards. And I did. I mean, I think there's genetics involved as well. Mm-hmm. That's just luck of the draw. But I made an effort, and sadly, a very unhealthy effort. But of course, at that stage in life, you know, when you've got friends having babies, they'll say, oh, you're amazing. You're back in your jeans after however many weeks. And how did you do it after having twins? And, you know, so you think, oh, this is great. I'm getting a lot of praise here and validation. So, yeah, not very healthy.
And it's sad, isn't it, that there is that pressure or that sort of glorification of, you know, after you've had your baby, like being back in your pre-baby jeans and stuff like that. And I find it so sad, because at the end of the day, during that stage, you know, your focus should be on building that relationship, that connection with your baby, and enjoying every moment of it. Like, that's such a special time that you're never going to get back.
No.
But for the focus to be on weight loss and the pressure as well, even if you don't want to lose weight, I'm sure that there's the pressure from other people to be like, you know, you've not shifted that weight yet. Is that staying on you?
Yeah. And it's so sad. I mean, I was breastfeeding and I managed to breastfeed the twins, but, you know, as well. And I was exhausted. I was absolutely exhausted. And if I'd just eaten a bit more, I probably wouldn't have been quite so exhausted. But it, and I suppose for me, it wasn't even the pressure. I mean, I hate, as you say, I hate this pressure. We have grown a baby, for goodness sake. You know, that's a lot of hard work and it's a miracle. So our bodies change. And this is what I talk about with my clients a lot, is that throughout life, if we base our happiness on the shape of our body, then we're never going to be happy because it's always changing through teenage years, through 20s, through 30s. It changes. And if we can get to a place of acceptance, then we can base our happiness on so much more important stuff.
We really can. Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, like, that you said it's not the baby that suffers, it's the mother that suffers. Has there been knock-on effects of you not eating enough during your pregnancy with your health now?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's just during my pregnancy, but I had osteoporosis and osteopenia in my hips and spine. In fact, they said that'll never come back. There was this theory you couldn't regenerate bone after 30 or something, but I've actually regenerated bone and I've improved it a lot, which I'm so pleased about. Just this year, I had a bone scan, so I'm really pleased about that. But yeah, I thought I was stuck with osteoporosis. Well, I'm not, which is great. I mean, it's taken a lot of hard work, but you know, yes. So I damaged my bones. Goodness knows what other damage. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, it's scary. I think with the bones, my understanding from when I did my nutrition degree, was that you kind of reach a point of your bones are continuously growing up until a certain age, and then it kind of caps out. And I didn't think that you could regrow.
That was the theory.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah, up to 30 or even 35, it peaks and then it stops regenerating.
Yeah.
So my aim once I recovered was to stop it getting worse. But actually, I've improved it. So,
well, that's amazing.
So that's really good.
That's lovely for people to hear if that's something that they're struggling with, is, you know, we don't want to be all doom and gloom about the impact of it, you know, to know that there's hope as well.
Yeah.
That's a real positive. And I guess I want to talk about the impact on your children of your eating disorder. But one thing I also wanted to ask was, I guess, the impact on your relationship. And you said that you had been quite secretive about it, which I think is very common with people with eating disorders. Did your partner know that you had an eating disorder whilst you're pregnant?
No.
Wow.
When I was pregnant, sorry, yes.
Yeah.
When we first got together, no.
Okay.
When we were married, sort of. I mean, it was very convenient, as in our marriage wasn't convenient, but it's 34 years on Sunday, actually, we've been married.
Oh,
so
congratulations.
Yeah, something's gone right. So he was a workaholic. I was an anorexic. It was perfect. So I was actually a student at the time, so I got married very young. So he would be out all day, not get back till late. We'd have supper together, but I could not eat all day. And then pretend I'd eaten all day and just have one meal, you know. So it worked incredibly well. And he wouldn't mind me saying this, but he was a little bit clueless and didn't really pick up on anything. Again, because I was very good at hiding it, but also because, you know, he'd been brought up in a boys' school with brothers, not really in tune. And again, it was the time as well. Eating disorders weren't recognized or talked about. So it just was very convenient. As even through the pregnancy, I don't think he really realized. It was afterwards. It was when I had some really bad dips after that, then he sort of clocked, okay, things aren't great here. But it did, going back to your question about whether it affected our relationship, yeah, it did. It really did. Because when before he was aware, it didn't, because I could just get on with it. once he was aware, he obviously was desperately worried, but didn't know how to help. Very mm-hmm. frustrated, which of course he was. But we did work through it, and he's been amazing. Absolutely, you know, so supportive. And he probably knows nearly as much as I do now about eating disorders.
It's interesting what you say about when he didn't know, it didn't impact your relationship. Mm. But then when he did know, it did impact your relationship. And I found it very similar. I mean, my partner, we were best friends before we got together. So he has always known that I've struggled. Mm. But for me, you know, when we were then in a relationship, it did build that friction because, like you say, he was so worried. And so I would like plate up my food or something and he would be like, that's not enough food. But to me, my eating disorder would say, he's trying to make you fat. Yeah, he's trying to do this. Course. He's trying to do that. And the yeah. eating disorder would kind of get in between us both and push yes. us apart.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people often, I personally was like, well, I need to lose weight because then, you know, my friends, my partner, my family, everyone will like me more because yeah. I'll be smaller, I'll be skinnier. Mm-hmm. In actual fact, it didn't work like that because it just made Hannah, the person that I am, smaller, and the kind of sparkle and energy that she had was just completely drained. And nobody had the person that they loved anymore. And yeah. I think it's that mixture of losing the person that you love, but equally the frustration of like, why are you doing this to yourself? Yeah. You're hurting yourself so much. You're hurting that person that I love.
And I think when we're anorexic, we think that people think we look better small. And I remember going on holiday one year and I was packing. We were going to a beach holiday and I was packing my bikini. It was when I was recovering. And I said to my husband, I said, I'm dreading putting my bikini on. He said, why? I said, because I've put on weight and you're going to think I've let myself go and I look awful. He said, no. He said, for the first time in years, I might not be embarrassed being with you on the beach.
Oh, wow.
And so our perception is so different of what people are thinking. You know, we're thinking, oh, people are going to think we've let ourselves go. We've got no willpower. We've got so fat, you know, all of this. Whereas in fact, they're thinking, thank goodness they're looking after themselves. Thank goodness they're looking vaguely human again. Mm. And a bit of light back in their face and eyes.
How did that feel when he said about it the embarrassed?
It was such a relief. Well, it was a relief. I mean, obviously, I was upset that he'd been embarrassed for so many years. Mm. But then I thought, well, at least I'm doing something about it now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. I think because I had a similar thing with my partner and I will always, like sometimes if I'm having a really bad time, most of the time now I actually like my body, which is a really nice thing to do. Yeah. But if I know that if I'm struggling, that's when I don't like my body and I'll say to him, like, I've gained loads of weight. Do you still find me attractive? Mm. And he will say, for the first time in quite a while, yes, I do find you attractive. I didn't find you attractive before. And I remember the first time he said it and I was like, what? Like that literally does not compute in my brain. And one of my friends said to me the other day, she was like, you're looking the best you've looked in years. And I was just, you know, it's not all about looks, obviously, but I think it's that realization, like you said, that your perception of the size that you are and the way that you look is so skewed because of the way that the eating disorder tells you, you know, being smaller is better.
But when you're in a meaningful relationship, it's the whole package that's attractive.
Yeah.
And it's you're alive and vibrant and connecting and engaging.
Absolutely. And I think it's the same with relationships and friendships. I actually went to a festival this weekend. So many of my friends were kind of saying, you know, we've got the Hannah back that we first became friends with.
Isn't that amazing?
So much more energy and it's so so happy and nice to be around. And I just stood there and I was like, what? You guys noticed that I wasn't very unwell? They were like, were pretty, you know, there was not much going
and
on.
I bet nobody said, oh, you've put on weight.
No, exactly. Exactly. One person did say, you're looking strong. And I was
How did
you take that? Initially, I was like, don't like that. Because I don't think I liked the fact that they commented on
my body
appearance at all. I didn't like the fact that they had kind of drawn attention to it. But then afterwards, I was like, well, you train at the gym 5 times a week.
You just expect?
Hit a bench PB. Isn't that what you're aiming for? Strong is definitely a lot better than what was before.
Yes.
But it's so nice when people start to recognise and you build up that connection again. And I guess with that, What impact, if any, do you think it had on your children?
Wow. A lot.
And, really?
And that was tough. I mean, that, I suppose, is my biggest regret from the whole eating disorder sort of experience. My husband's an adult. Not that it doesn't upset me that I've hurt him and put him through stuff, but children are so vulnerable. They didn't go into this, you know, knowing. They were born into it. Now, absolutely fine. But so when they were growing, until they were about, the twins were 10 and my eldest was 11. And that's when I had a really bad relapse. And I had to go for help, serious help, rather than just sort of weekly therapy sessions. And, you know, it was, they said they were going to take me in as an inpatient. I said, well, no, I'll just escape, which I would have done. I said, I've got three children. I'm not going into hospital. But I found this amazing place near us where we lived that I could go for breakfast. I got there for breakfast and I left after supper. But it meant that the children had to board at the school they were at for a year, which was awful. And it was at that point I had to tell them what was going on, because up until then, I hadn't talked, you know, it's all they knew. I hadn't ever had to bring the subject up. They hadn't ever commented on it. I think they didn't really notice that, you know, when children are little, you can feed them earlier anyway. And, you know, it's not really, you know, you feed them their tea at 5 o'clock and then my husband and I would eat later. So it was easy for me not to eat with them. So when they were, 10, 11, I had to tell them because they were going to start boarding at this school. I mean, they were quite excited by it at the time, but I had to tell them what was going on. And that was difficult. How do you explain to two 10-year-olds and an 11-year-old about an eating disorder? So I can't even remember the words I used, but I think I just said I was struggling to keep healthy and I was going somewhere that was going to help me, you know, become healthy and well again. And as time went on, so over the years, then I spent 18 months there, in fact, and then we moved to Madrid. And then, so over that time, I've got two boys and a girl. My daughter and I, she's always asked a lot of questions about it. And she went through a stage of, I'd say, trying to have an eating disorder. Now, she hasn't got the genetic predisposition, which I passionately believe is very relevant. So she, luckily, it didn't develop. But she tried to be, you know, to lose weight. And but I have to say, all three children now have got very healthy relationships with food. And no thanks to me. But hopefully in the last 6 years or whatever, I have managed to, I mean, they're all grown up now, but I've managed to talk to them about it. And so I suppose, yeah, from the age of 10, 11, they knew about eating disorders. And I think that, yes, it's sad. Yes, it was hard for them. But on the other hand, they understand now so much more about mental health. They grew up seeing that it's okay not to be okay. They grew up seeing their own mother really struggle. And so, and we were very open about it from then on. And they can, I mean, I know my daughter especially, she's helped friends of hers who've been struggling because she understands it. She really understands it. And I think it's made them much kinder people, probably. So I think there are always silver linings.
Yeah, I'm wondering, and this may just be a thought rather than the definite, but I'm wondering if, because you have had your experience of an eating disorder, and I guess they've seen the chronic impact that that can have on your life, as opposed to, so my mum has always dieted, my grandma has always dieted. And so for me, it was just completely normalized to diet. Nobody ever addressed the issue with that. Nobody ever said, you don't actually have to fit into the smallest capable body that you have. It was just kind of normal and accepted, and it wasn't a conversation. It's obviously, since I've struggled, been a conversation. And, you know, my mum has done a lot of work herself on changing her relationship with her body and food and stuff, because I think I brought the issue to the forefront of like, this is not normal. We can't live like this.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether, because you were so open about the fact that that's not how you want to live and that that's not how your relationship with your body should be, that maybe that's helped them to see actually going down the route of an eating disorder isn't one that I want to take, and I can embrace my body and be proud of my body and have a good relationship with food, because they've seen you transition from that really difficult place in an eating disorder to now being recovered and helping other people.
I think definitely. Yeah, I agree completely. I think while I was going through the eating disorder, so my daughter was a teenager, well, they're all teenagers, but particularly for my daughter, that was really difficult because she was bigger than me. So I think growing up, you know, 13, 14, and your mother's wearing smaller clothes than you, well, that's not normal. But she didn't know any different. So that made her feel bad. So that's what makes me really sad, that she's got the most beautiful body and she was made to feel unintentionally, obviously, that there was something wrong with that body. Now, hopefully, since I've done all the work on myself and we've talked about it so much, yes, I think you're right, Hannah, that they see that a body is a body, it's a vessel. I love that expression. What is it? Your body is an instrument, not an ornament. And it's so true, you know, and it doesn't mean you don't look after it. Of course we want to look after it and give it the right care and feed it nourishing food and exercise appropriately. But it's not an ornament. It's not there to be just admired or looked at or whatever. It's functional, really. And I think that's what my children have now realized, and they've got really good relationships with food.
Absolutely. Well, I would argue that having an eating disorder is not looking after your body much as people might like to think that smaller is healthier. It's definitely not. Is not.
No, absolutely not.
I wanted to ask you a question about something you said earlier. You said your daughter didn't have the genetic predisposition to an eating disorder. And I just wondered if you wanted to expand a bit more on what you meant by that.
Yeah, so there's this theory, which I believe in, is that you need the three Ps for an eating disorder. So you need the predisposing factor, which is the genes. You need the precipitating factor, which is what triggers it. And you need the perpetuating factor, which is what keeps it going. So I was sent to boarding school. I was miserable. I had that genetic predisposition. My sister, who's 2 years older than me, was sent to exactly the same school. She struggled a bit to start with, tried to lose some weight. After a few months, thought, this is really boring, I'm not going to do this. She doesn't have that genetic predisposition. So we were in the same environment, the same struggles. And so she, I see it time and again, with my clients. I say, is there anyone in your family? And I can guarantee 99.9% of the time they say, oh, yeah, well, actually my aunt or my grandmother or my mother or my sister, somebody, or my father even, somebody in that family has had or has an eating disorder. And I find that fascinating. I can trace it back in my family to people who've had an eating disorder. Now, obviously, because it was in generations gone by, it wasn't that, it wasn't talked about at all, but I can see the patterns, I can see behaviours, definitely.
Yeah, I think definitely there needs to be more research done on the genetic factors that kind of can influence eating disorders. I don't think that there is enough work that has been done into it.
Yeah.
And I also think that, like you've said, that it's so, I guess, difficult to trace back, because like I know that, I look at my grandma and she always used to watch what she ate and was very conscious about her body weight and stuff like that. But it was never kind of labelled as an eating disorder because we didn't have that awareness.
Exactly.
But I think, like everybody is so unique, aren't they? And the kind of factors that contribute to their eating disorder. And I think also one thing that I always think is sometimes people have incredibly good protective factors. Yeah. And I'm not saying they're, because I personally came from an extremely loving family. So it wasn't that I didn't have the family dynamics. It was just that, unfortunately, there wasn't the protective factors in place to protect me from developing an eating disorder, because in my household, going on a diet was pretty normal. My mum was on a diet, my dad was on a diet, my sister was on a diet, my brother was on a diet.
It's just what you did.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you're surrounded by that, you're going to start thinking,
well, maybe I should go on a diet.
I think I should, yeah. And especially as, you know, at an age where you're quite easily influenced and you're finding yourself and trying to fit in, if everyone around you is doing it, then it kind of just makes sense. But I also wanted to ask you about, like, family dynamics as your children were growing up. I mean, you know, you said when you were breastfeeding that you were quite tired. And being a parent is knackering, irrespective of whether you've got an eating disorder or not. So how did that impact things? I guess just being, like, a quote-unquote normal mum, like doing after-school activities or taking the kids out or being a wife and things like that.
I think looking back, I think you just get on with it, actually, Hannah. I think you just don't know any different. So I had three children under 20 months. I breastfed them all, obviously not all three at once, but I breastfed my eldest, then breastfed the twins.
Yeah.
And then people, family were saying, you've got to stop breastfeeding the twins, you're exhausted. So I did, but then I used to secretly sneak in little breastfeeds with them without anyone knowing because I didn't want to stop. And then it's just, my husband would admit now, I was a single parent because he was working every hour God sent. So, but I just did it. I think you just do it. And I just remember thinking, all I want is time to sit and read the newspaper. I'd love to, or just go to the loo on my own. And I think, you know, if any mothers, I'm sure there'll be mothers listening, they can relate to that. You know, that's all I want, is to be able to go to the loo in peace. Even at the weekend, it wasn't in peace, because even though my husband was around, they'd still want me. But I think, as far as the tiredness goes, you just get on with it. And you don't realise, because I had nothing to compare to. So it's not like I'd been a mother without an eating disorder.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd never known. And another thing I think is worth mentioning is that I last year was diagnosed with autism. And I've actually done the neurodiversity training with eating disorders as well. And it's so interesting, because I'm sure looking back, I mean, that just fits the puzzle so well now. It helps me understand so much more reasons why I got an eating disorder and why it was so comforting to me and why I didn't want to let go of it.
I think just before we go on to the autism thing, something that I found in my recovery or my eating disorder, things like you said, you do just get on with it. And I look back now and I'm like, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I was doing so much that I couldn't physically do now. I am exhausted all the time now, and I am in recovery. And I think that's because recovery takes it out of you.
It does.
But I look back and I'm like, how did I navigate all of that? And I think the eating disorder, it almost just, you just keep going. You know that you've got to get stuff done and you just keep going. And that's that. For me, it was when I then started recovery that I was like, I'm really tired. I'm exhausted. Like, I can't do that today. Yeah. But it was because also I was able to give myself that space and that compassion to be like, it's okay to not do that today. Whereas in eating disorder, there was no let up. If something
no
needed
option.
Doing.
Yeah. And you're in fight or flight. You're permanently in fight or flight mode. So, you know, your body, it's amazing, because people say, oh, but I'm fine. I'm, you know, acing my A-levels. And they are. And that's why it's so hard to explain to somebody, you are very unwell. They say, but I'm fine. I'm running 10 kilometres every day. I'm doing my A-levels. I'm getting top marks. I'm top of the class. Nothing wrong with me. And then the moment they do acknowledge it, and then they stop, and then they can hardly move. And they think, well, what's wrong? I'm eating more. And now I'm feeling worse. So this is wrong as well. I better go back to being anorexic, because it was better.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the difficulty with recovery when you first start, is it seems so much worse than the eating disorder ever did. But going on to the autism piece, I think that's really interesting, because I recently got diagnosed with ADHD, but in the assessment, they also said that I should consider the autism diagnosis. Now, financially, I can't afford that. However, the way that I explained it to the assessor was, I'm happy with being self-diagnosed autistic, because the autism feels like a safety blanket, because it's rigid and it's routine and it keeps everything safe. However, the ADHD, that only really came up for me in recovery when I started having energy again. Mm-hmm. The chaos came back and it felt so unsettling. So it's like, I need to have that diagnosis in order to be able to navigate eating disorder recovery.
Yeah.
Now, when things can't go routine and rigid, that's when I really struggle.
Mm.
But I think for me, both of them played such a big part in being able to navigate life and feeling uncomfortable and the eating disorder. But because I now have the words to say, oh, I'm struggling with this because of the ADHD or the autism or da da da, it's just like you were saying, put all the pieces together. Yes. And I'm kind of like, okay, I don't need the eating disorder anymore. Exactly. Because I get what's going on.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I would say, well, I can't give a percentage, but such a high percentage of my anorexic clients are also autistic, because as we know, I mean, there's ADHD as well, but it's very common for autism and anorexia to go together. And it's what I try and do is separate them out and say, okay, what's the autism? What's the anorexia? You know, the anorexia needs to go.
So important.
We can keep the autism. So if you want a food plan every day, have a food plan if that makes you feel safe, but make sure it's a good food plan.
Yeah,
but that's the autism.
Yes, I would equally argue, and I've been saying this on a couple of podcasts, because, and this is just my perspective, so for other people it may be different, but I actually don't think that even the anorexia needs to go, because for me the anorexia is part of me. Mm-hmm. It's just, it needs a reshuffle. Yeah. It needs all the qualities of anorexia: the perfectionism, the determination, the motivation, all of those things. They make me a great person in life. Yeah. They make me very good at my job, very good at lots of different things.
Yeah.
However, I just need to refocus them, and I need to reshuffle them a bit, and I need to not let it be a detriment to my health. So rather than it being anorexia, that label goes, but the qualities that make up the anorexia stay. They're just being fine-tuned a little bit.
Definitely. And I think along those lines as well, when I was recovering, I thought, okay, I've had the strength, the willpower and determination to stay anorexic for 35 years. That takes a lot of determination, because I was hungry, starving for 35 years. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm going to switch that round. I'm going to turn it on its head and use that same determination to get better. And that really helped me, because I thought, I've got it there in me. And like you say, we've got these personality traits which have made us anorexic, but we can switch them round and use them in a positive way, in a healthy way.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I did as well. I thought, you know, you are, and I have said this quite a lot on the podcast, people that I meet that have got or had an eating disorder are the most resilient, strong people that I have ever met in my life, because living with that alongside living life is freaking hard. Mm. It is absolutely so difficult. But then when you can put that effort and energy into recovery, not only can you then be that strong, determined person, but for beneficial reasons for yourself, but also so self-aware. And I think that actually are qualities that are so useful in life and, you know, can really help you to thrive within life, no matter what you want to focus on.
And I think, you know, going back to linking it to having children, is showing the children that you can be vulnerable, but you can be strong.
Yes.
You can need help, but you can actually be so determined and do so much when you set your mind to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I know my children are really proud of me, which is a lovely thing, you know, that they realize now that they're 30, that, you know, what I've been through. And they do look at it and say, it's amazing that you've recovered and that you're doing the work you do now. They love that I can now help other people. But, you know, we see it as such a shameful thing when we're ill, especially eating disorders. And I think having an eating disorder as a grown-up, as a mother, as a wife, I remember thinking, well, I should have my shit together, basically. So I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this podcast.
You can swear.
You know,
especially when we're talking about things like this.
You know, I really did think that. I thought, what am I faffing around doing? You know, come on, just get a grip. You know, I can bring up three children. I can, you know, sustain a relationship. I can run a household. I can do also, we moved abroad and, you know, all of that. And I can't even gain weight, you know, get over any stupid little eating disorder, which it isn't, of course, but in your head, that's what you're telling yourself. And so that was really hard. really hard, I think, as an adult, because like you said at the beginning, it's so much associated with teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think, okay, yeah. I'm 30, 40.
I'm so sorry. I was distracted then because of the keyboard. Could you just repeat what you said?
What was I saying? Last bit. Yeah, so just as an adult, how you should have your shit together. So
yes.
How difficult it is to accept that actually, yeah, I am an adult, but I have an eating disorder. And it doesn't mean I have to have it all sorted. No. But it is shameful because it's associated with a teenage girl, that illness.
Yeah. And also I think that there's an element of it in, you know, you're an adult, you should be able to look after yourself. You should be able to feed yourself and nourish yourself. And I think for me anyway, a big part of my eating disorder, the kind of purpose that it served me, was I didn't feel that I had the skills to look after myself. So I was like, if I make myself small and I make myself unable to look after myself, everyone else will have to look out for me. And then that was kind of trying to keep those childlike tendencies in order to feel safe and to feel protected, because I was ill. So people had to look out for me.
And that's very common. And I think a lot of people are very scared to get better because they think, well, nobody's going to look out for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I was very fortunate in that I could feed my children. So I think a lot of, you know, I've come across a lot of women who've got children who find it very hard to give their children enough food. Saying that, when they were younger, I could do that. As particularly my daughter went into adolescence, I struggled with her changing body.
Really? I was going to ask you, did you struggle with the eating habits? Because obviously as a teenager, you know, I went through that. I would, you know, like eat so much food. You know, it was crazy. And I remember my mum saying to me one summer, and she had the biggest heart in the world. She didn't mean it maliciously, but she said, I think maybe you do need to stop eating so much. And that for me was a catalyst of, I need to stop eating so much.
I did. Yeah. And I, you know, I did find it very hard, especially, I mean, I suppose in a way for the boys, it was easier because they were like sticks and they just ate so much and they stayed like sticks. But with my daughter, she was eating a lot and she was changing shape. And I thought, oh, I've got to control this. And even with the boys, I thought, I've got to control their food. And my husband sat me down, I think the children were about 13, 14. And he said, if you keep controlling their food like this, you're going to ruin your relationship with them, which is pretty hard hitting, but it's the best thing he said. Mm. And I really had to take a step back and think, whoa, I was so controlling of their food. I mean, the children would tell you that now. I was I hate that I was, but I was, because I thought, I've got to control my food. I've got to control their food. And when they were little, I could, and I could feed them really healthy food in the right amounts. I mean, not as in healthy, just clean or anything. I gave them everything. But I was in control of it. But when they became teenagers and they started eating more and, you know, they could go and buy their own stuff and go to friends, I was suddenly out of control. So when they were at home, I was controlling even more.
Yeah.
So that wasn't healthy at all. But my husband telling me was the best thing, because I did actually, it was hard. It was so hard. The number of times I had to bite my tongue and say, don't say anything, don't say anything, they'll be fine. So that was difficult.
I guess it's that trust, isn't it? And I found that through my own recovery. It's trusting that my body knows what it needs. And I guess it's learning to trust that your children also know what they need and that they will find their own way. And I guess kind of going on to that in terms of your own recovery, how on earth, after 35 years, do you start to live without an eating disorder? Because that, I mean, I got my eating disorder when I was 14. I'm now 28, so that's half, 27, sorry, I keep saying I'm 28, nearly half of my life, over half of my life. And I feel like I missed out on, you know, the development years, the young adult years, so much of like developing my personality. And I know, I said to a friend the other day, I was like, I feel like a baby because I'm trying foods that I haven't tasted for years. And I'm like, oh my God, this food is absolutely amazing. I can't believe it. But so much of my personality was entangled into that. And I think that's been the hardest thing for me, is untangling Hannah from what was tied up into the eating disorder.
Yeah. So yeah, it was really difficult. And I think for a few years it was, oh my goodness, I can eat this. I mean, there was the sadness of all the family holidays we'd been on, which I just not ruined for everybody, I hope, but certainly it had an effect on the holiday, but certainly ruined for myself because I can't eat that, got to go on a run there, got to do this, got to do that. All the rules. And so now, you know, the last however many years that I've been recovered, holidays are so much more fun, so much freer. And it is. And I was in New York with one of my sons a few months ago, and he said, "Mom, it's so nice because now I know we can go out and you're going to eat." You know, we were sitting sharing a proper New York pizza, you know how you get the massive ones. And I think he was hoping to have some to take away. Well, no chance with me now. Whereas before I'd have had one slice and that would have been it. Whereas now I was, you know, having as much as he was. So even now they're noticing the difference. They appreciate the difference. So there is a sadness of what I've missed out on. There really is. I suppose I was very functional. As in, I could get away with so much because the longer I had it, the more clever I got with it. But I missed out on experiences. Anything that involved food, I'd say no to. And then, of course, there's the autism that comes into that. Would I have said no anyway because I didn't want to socialise? But it was convenient that they were both there.
Yeah. And do you know what I think? Because I would say that I was like functioning for a long time. And then you actually look back on it and I think, but was I? Because I may have been functioning in terms of, you know, I could still go to work and I could still do X, Y, and Z. But, you know, you've just said there you would not go to certain events because food would be involved. That to me is not that. Right. Yeah, I guess you're functioning, but you're not thriving. You're not living.
Exactly. And that's the and difference, I think
that's,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's the difference is you can totally live a life with an eating disorder and you can function and you can do the bare minimum of what you need to do to exist. But in order to actually live, I love the story that you just shared about going to New York with your son and having pizza, because I had a similar situation with my partner the other day. We ordered so much food because we didn't know what the size of the food was going to be. And it came out and it was so much food. And initially I was like, oh my God, this is so much food. And then my thought was, we've got to eat all this. And then I thought, actually, no, we can take some of this home, but let's just see how we go. Anyway, we get like a quarter, maybe a third of the way through the pizza. And my partner was like, I'm struggling. I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? I've got so much more space.
I'm going to finish it.
Just, but just things like that of not having to have that worry of if we go out for food, they're not going to eat. And I think for me, when I was thinking about recovery, it was so much focused around like the food and enjoying my body. But it's so much more than that. It's being in the moment and not having that worry, because you can just go out and you can sit and chat with people and have a nice time rather than it having to be about the focus on the food.
Yeah. And my husband says now, he said, it is so lovely that we can go out together and eat properly rather than me going and saying, I'll have the salad with no dressing, please. And that's my meal. You know, now we share food, we share meals together.
Yes.
And it is so lovely. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's just so nice for people to hear that there is always hope. You know, no matter what, you know, however secretive you've been, however long it's been existing for, there is always hope. So I'm absolutely sure that people listening to this will be so grateful for you sharing your story. Where can people go if they want to find out more about working with you or just want to know a bit more about your own journey?
So my website is zesthealthcoaching.co.uk. Instagram is Zest Health Coaching. I haven't actually posted for ages because I realized I don't like Instagram. I love looking at Instagram, but I don't like posting. So I thought, why am I doing it? So there is, I have got back posts people can look at, but just because I haven't posted for a while doesn't mean I'm not here and alive and working. But they can always message me. I'm always on Instagram, but just not posting. So either Zest Health Coaching on Instagram or zesthealthcoaching.co.uk. And there's a link if they want to chat to me to book a call on there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Caroline. It's been so nice to chat to you and hear all about your story. So thank you much for sharing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Hannah. It's lovely to meet you after I've listened to all your podcasts and I follow you on Instagram. So it's so nice to actually meet you. Thank you so much.
It's honestly so funny the amount of people that say that. And for me, it's strange because I had this instance once in London. I was walking through Covent Gardens with my mum. We were going to watch a show and I heard my name and I thought, no, there must be another Anna. And then I had it again. And I was like, you know, she's like, actually, I think someone is calling my name. And I turned round and they were like, I listened to the podcast. I've listened to every episode. I'm such a big fan. All of this. And I said to my mum afterwards, I was like, I feel a bit starstruck. I now know how celebrities feel because they know everything about me. I'm very open on this podcast. I don't know them from Adam. It's like, when I don't meet people on the podcast, I've listened to so many episodes and I'm like, oh yeah, forgot that I do that every week and share everything about my life.
It's so weird, isn't it? It's so odd. So odd. But you're famous, Hannah. You are famous.
Absolutely. I don't like that thought, actually. I'm going to say I'm not. Just pretend that no one listens.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.